Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Welcome to all my returning listeners. If you're joining me for the first time today, welcome. So we're carrying on with our Allergy Kids series. And over the last few weeks, September and October, I have been talking to allergy kids of all ages. We've had kids on as young as 4 years old, and then I've had some 8 and 10 years old. I've also had some teenagers over the last few weeks, and they've been telling me all about how they manage allergies and what they think. And now we're moving on to those teenagers who become adults. And today I'm welcoming on Juliet, who is going to talk to me all about her journey having allergies and going to university. So welcome, Juliet. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So the first question I like to ask is, tell me about your allergy journey. Tell me, you know, what allergies you have and what's it been like? When did they start and how you've been finding it?
So I'm allergic to, I'm allergic to all types of tree nuts. So like cashews, almonds, hazelnuts, all of those, and not peanuts, which you'd think that people would understand that they're different things, but actually when I end up like talking to restaurants or other people, they always end up saying something like, oh, so you've never had peanut butter before. But no, I can eat peanuts. But I think I found out about this allergy when I was like 2 or 3 years old. I was a toddler and my mom had given me a few cashews to eat when we were just walking at the playground, and it didn't go well. And I think my face started like changing colors, and she didn't know what was going on. I mean, she'd obviously never had a kid with food allergies before. So I think she took me to the playground as we were on the way to going to anyway. And she fed me a popsicle, and the popsicle, I guess, like discolored my face further because kids are messy and that's how they eat popsicles, you know? And, I think she assumed that it was just like the like sugar all over my face or whatever. But eventually we figured out that something was going on. I say we. Eventually she figured out that something was going on and called my doctor, and I ended up in the hospital and all of that. So, I mean, since then I've had reactions here or there, but nothing that dramatic. I haven't ended up in the hospital for it, but I've had like minor reactions when I've made a mistake or whatever. But now I'm not a toddler. I'm 21. I'm in college. And after like a long period of staying away from restaurants, at this point, I eat out in restaurants virtually every day, and that started with the blog that I do, really, but I mean, I know that sounds sort of backwards, but starting the blog really was the impetus behind starting to eat out and not the other way around, which is strange, but that's how it went.
Oh, yeah, that's good. So, like, why were you worried about eating out in restaurants?
I just figured that it was too much of a... I felt like it was too stressful to trust every single like waiter or person I would talk to in a restaurant to know what he or she was talking about, because I even when the server's especially like nice or friendly or whatever, it's not like you need bad intentions to inadvertently pass on misinformation or to just not know any better, because a lot of people who aren't dealing with food allergies don't really understand what sorts of things you have to be careful of, and like they won't understand that using the same pan for something can mean just as bad of a reaction as putting actual nuts in a dish. So I didn't like the idea of just having to wait and see every meal, basically, I guess. Like, I didn't like the idea of having to just take a bite and then, well, if it goes well, it goes well. And if it doesn't, you know. So I kind of stopped entirely, except for I would still eat at chains that, like, international chains and stuff that would have, like, online allergen information that I felt was standardized enough that I didn't have to ask one person to give me information. But beyond that, I mean, I would just eat at home.
And is that, was that your feeling like all throughout growing up, you didn't want to go out and you didn't want to risk it? Or is that, did that develop maybe as a teenager or?
Yeah, it definitely started when I was maybe 13 or 14. It's actually, I can sort of pinpoint when it started. My family was always really big on eating out in restaurants, so I was pretty used to it as a kid, and it usually went well. I mean, there was one or two instances where I'd eaten like a dessert or I think one time a pasta dish, and I'd gotten like an itchy throat as a result. But for the most part, it wasn't at restaurants that I had reactions. But eventually, I was on the way to high school. My mom was driving me to school, and I was in ninth grade. And I went to this cafe that I had been going to for basically since I was in like fifth or sixth grade, because it was near where I went to middle school. And I don't know why I thought it was a good idea to eat at this cafe, but I ate there all the time. And I had gotten like a brownie, something like that. And I was eating it in the car on the way to school. And it did, it didn't feel right. I didn't have like a full on allergic reaction, but I definitely got like a scratchy throat and itchy mouth and all of that. I don't know. It kind of freaked me out. And I was like, this probably needs to change. I probably need to like tighten my, what I'll let in and what I won't let in. So after that, I don't know, it was probably an overreaction at that point, like to just stop eating anywhere. But I stopped eating anywhere. I think the only places I would eat after that were Subway and McDonald's for some reason. I don't even know why.
I think a lot of teenagers are like, no, Subway and McDonald's is fine for me.
And it was weird. Like I didn't like talking about why. So I would just, I guess everyone thought I really liked Subway, which was sort of weird, because who really likes Subway? But yeah, that's how that went for like 4 or 5 years, and I didn't really eat much else. I mean, I ate a lot at home, obviously. I didn't eat just like, but yeah.
And then what changed?
Well, it's sort of silly, but I moved out. First thing was that I moved out, and then there was no one cooking for me anymore. So the pool of things that I was eating got like way narrower. Like I don't know, my mom is gonna make like a full-fledged dinner. If I'm gonna cook for myself, it's probably gonna be like plain pasta or something like that. So I got really like bored with everything I was eating. And then beyond that, I had moved I moved into an apartment with my boyfriend, who moved actually to be in New York City from Maine. So we moved in together, and we're both going to school in New York City. So I didn't want to have any of my allergens in the house or anything, because I wouldn't be comfortable with that. So I felt really bad sort of like restricting his diet in the same, because I'm okay with restricting my own diet. I'm used to it and I feel like it's my decision. But I felt really bad that like we'd walk around all around the city and he'd see all sorts of like window displays and all these restaurants and stuff and like visibly salivate. And I'd be like, sorry, we can't go in there. So I felt really bad. And I don't know what the thought process was. I think I started Googling like nut-free restaurants in New York just to find like anything, maybe like one or two places. And a few came up. I found a couple of places that people had like indexed and put together lists before me, but really only like one or two websites that were actually useful for me and not just like, I was able to find a lot of places where mothers would write about, I was able to take my son here and he had chicken fingers and they were able to make him safe chicken fingers, stuff like that. But not very many restaurants where it's like all or most of this menu would be viable for you, an adult, to eat, you know. So I was really frustrated that I couldn't find what I wanted on Google. Like, I guess I'm so used to being able to find out whatever I want by just Googling it that it actually sort of offended me that I couldn't like find out, like, why isn't it here? So then I was like, you know, I don't know any places, but I do have like this handful of chains that I trust. So I guess I could start with making a list of those. And I didn't really intend to go beyond that, but, I ended up, I think there were like two nut-free places that I had found like through other people's blogs. There was one, there's a diner called Big Daddy's. And there's this taco place called, Cochinita, which is actually closed. And I was going to Cochinita to write a blog post on it. And they were just shuttered when I got there. I was like, okay, well, that reduces my options by a significant percentage. And I was really upset about that. So I started, that was when I started like contacting restaurants directly and putting together sort of my own original list and not just reviewing places, like putting together references and materials for like, here are 50 places you can go, you know. So now I have that.
That's cool. And I mean, when it came to moving, because are you from New York? I know you moved for university.
Yeah, I'm from New York City originally. I grew up uptown, and then I went to college upstate for one semester before transferring back to a school in New York City. I go to NYU now, which is downtown in New York, so a couple miles away from where I grew up, but still, I mean, within the same city, of course, but yeah.
But how is like changing location kind of affected you and your confidence to be able to go out and eat and feel safe?
I would say there's I don't know if it's affected my confidence, but there is definitely more downtown down here. Like, okay. I live fairly close to my school, and my school is, well, like 40 or 50,000 people roughly my age and my like cohort. So yeah. Businesses really like to open like casual, inexpensive restaurants around here.
Yeah.
And a lot of what's trendy right now is to open like fast casual counter service types of places that I can actually afford to eat at. So that's really helped. Because I mean, where I used to live uptown, it's a lot of restaurants, like sit-down restaurants, which I mean, of course, there's sit-down restaurants down here, but there aren't as many casual places that aren't just like Chipotle or McDonald's. Like a lot of it is less accessible for me price-wise.
Yeah.
So it's definitely helped. And also, I mean, the atmosphere of a more casual place is way easier to walk in and be like, hey, can I ask you a few questions about your ingredients, as opposed to like a restaurant where you have to be sitting down and already at a table, like committed to it before you can really start like to talk, which is so awkward if you have to just get up and walk out if they're like, we can't do anything.
You know what? That's true. I was thinking back. I have actually left restaurants I've sat down at when I didn't feel safe. But it is always a bit awkward, isn't it? You're just like, I don't feel safe.
It's
but I
so uncomfortable. this happened to me. I spent a week and a half in Paris recently, and I couldn't figure out a way. Because I can speak French some, but I can't speak French on the phone and like understand people speak French to me on the phone. It's way harder. So I didn't really have a method of like contacting restaurants in advance, because a lot of them wouldn't respond to emails. So we ended up like a couple times just walking in and being like, can I ask you some questions? But they'd kind of like brush you off to a table before addressing you. And then there were a few situations where I like faked taking a phone call to walk out the door, because I felt too awkward to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to stay. Because it's awkward enough with like the language barrier. Yeah. It was a mess, and it's just as much of a mess here, honestly.
But the fact that you can do it anyway is good, because you need to.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than staying and either not eating anything or trying something and having something go wrong, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So tell me a little bit about, like, how has your... Because it sounds like your boyfriend was kind of the inspiration for dining out a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, he really likes to eat. He was also like, he'd never lived in New York City before. And I, even though I wasn't eating much of the food of New York City at the time, I'm very big on bragging about like how good the food here is. So I feel like I kept like playing it up and saying like, oh, there's this, and my family and I used to go to this restaurant and all that. And it was just like, but we're not going to, sorry. So it felt kind of absurd. So I had to like back up my words somehow.
And how, like, talk me through, I know you went to some of the big chains. When you wanted to venture out of the big chains, how did you go about researching, contacting, like, feeling safe?
It's quite a method. It developed over time. I don't know. There's a lot of steps to it, and it's a little labor intensive, and I'm thinking of sort of changing up how I do it. But so far, how I do it is, I'll just find like restaurants how anybody else finds restaurants, you know, like Google like best tacos in New York City or whatever. And then I'll open all of their menus and new tabs or whatever, just like scroll through them, make sure I'm not seeing anything that would pose like significant cross-contamination risks. Like if the majority of the dishes have nuts in them, or if there's nuts in something that, you know, you can kind of like feel out what the preparations are going to be. Like if there's only nuts in like some salads and all the rest of the dishes are fine, then I'll think that probably sounds pretty promising. But anyway, I'll figure out what looks worth inquiring after from looking at their menus. And then usually they'll have like a contact form on their website. And I don't know why, because nobody ever responds to messages that they get through their contact form. But I'll send them a message. And sometimes they'll respond. And that's really nice, because I much prefer to get the sort of information in writing, because they're more diligent about checking over what they're saying if they're typing it out. And I mean, if it ends up being inconsistent, I can like send it back to them and say, well, you said this before, can you clarify which is the truth, you know? Because I don't think people lie intentionally, but people do get it wrong a lot. They'll just like overlook something and be like, oh yeah, well, actually we do have nuts. Like, okay. But when they don't get back to my emails, I'll try to call them around like not like busy mealtime hours, but just between meals, like maybe like 4 or 5 o'clock. I'll do like 20 restaurants at a time, like every couple weeks. And I'll just call them, say, The same thing every time. I say hi. I just have a question. I'm allergic to tree nuts, and I was wondering if you use any tree nuts in any of your cooking or have them in your kitchen. And they always say peanuts, and I'm like, no. And we get through that whole thing, and it's like a horrible skit. And then they'll answer, and I'll kind of have to like feel out whether they seem like they know what they're talking about. And if it seems like, oh, yeah, you're fine, whatever, and they hang up, then I'll just, like, I keep a list. I'll just, like, italicize it and call back a different day, hope to get someone else. Yeah. It goes weirdly sometimes, though. I had one guy one time ask for my cell phone number and then text me a picture of the ingredients on their bread. I was like, thanks, but this was strange.
It's better than usual.
Yeah, no, it's like at least you were transparent, but okay, you could have like read it. I don't know. It was weird, but I was grateful that he did it. I mean, people get really weird when you ask them about their bread, because that's always my second question is if they serve bread, I'm like, can you tell me what bakery you get your bread from? Because 9 times out of 10, I can't have the bread, and I just like to know going in, especially if I'm going to be blogging about it, whether I need to like not eat any bread. So they'll get really weird about it and think I'm trying to like steal their vendor or something. I don't know. Like, can't you tell why I'm asking for my first question? But apparently not. But that's it. That's all I do, really. And then I go and I double check with the waiter and whoever's at the front of the house or whatever type of restaurant it is and see how it goes.
That's really thorough. No, that's really good. Because I mean, when you're kind of living away from home for the first time, and especially for some of the younger teenagers who are starting to go out by themselves, like, even though you've had your mum or your dad helping you with it all the time, I think it's nice to hear it from someone else who's doing
it. Yeah. I think I'm on the more neurotic end of the spectrum too. Like, I know there's, in my experience at least, there's tons of types, but I've met like two main types of people with food like young people with food allergies. And online through the blog and through certain Facebook groups that I joined to push my blog to, I've met I've met a lot of people. The vast majority of people I met online are people who are roughly as thorough as I am, or who like won't eat anywhere that they haven't thoroughly investigated beforehand. But then, I mean, you meet people who have allergies in real life, and I've never met a single one who does anything more than just going into the restaurant, sitting down and saying like, hey, does this dish have any nuts in it, or whatever their allergen is, and then kind of just going with it, which is surprising to me because I've never gone about it that way. And I think I would be really anxious if I went about it that way, but it seems to work for a lot of people. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, when I go, because I'm allergic to peanuts and tree nuts, so yeah, I have the same discussion with people. I'm like, no, peanuts are actually technically a legume, so yeah, that's why they're different, and I'm clarifying peanuts as well as tree nuts. I think I depends where I'm going. Like, if it's a big chain that I know quite well, I don't necessarily need to go like call beforehand.
Yeah.
And I just check with the waiter when I get there. And then if it's like a language barrier thing, because I have traveled in India, and you know, communicating that I have a nut allergy is difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I managed it. Well, the second time, one of the times I went with friends, one of my friends was actually mildly allergic to peanuts, so she would test all my food before. So if she got an itchy mouth, then I was definitely not going to eat it, because I have anaphylaxis and she just had a mild allergy, so she was my tip.
That's a pretty good setup, though.
It was kind of weird, but she was happy to do it. And I mean, we all pretty much ate the same things, so
yeah,
my friends and I who were going. But when I tried to communicate, and then it would just be really, you know, choosing some thing that I recognized all the ingredients, and asking for plain food, or if it's grilled food is usually safer. You know, those sorts of things, if I can't check and I have to eat, or I do the cooking.
Yeah. I mean, when I went to Paris, I had planned on, like, as a last resort cooking, but I mean, we got an Airbnb to make sure that we weren't just going to be in like a hotel with a microwave or whatever. But I don't know. We didn't have a stove. We only had a hot plate. And I also felt like, I mean, I was in Paris. I didn't want to cook my own food from the store. I wanted to like go to the restaurants, but it was really tough. It's tough to communicate in another language.
Yeah, it is. I think there are more things now, like allergy cards, which are coming in, which are so useful. I took one to Italy and that helped a lot.
Yeah, I definitely got a lot of recommendations to bring allergy cards. I think it was a combination of I was too lazy to actually like order them or print them out myself. And I was like, no, I can speak French. I can do this. But I wanted them when I was there. I definitely wanted allergy cards.
I've only recently got allergy cards, though, because I know I did have one when I went to Holland when I was 16. And that my mum and I made and asked a friend who was Dutch to translate it. But before that, like, I never had them. It was like, now they're coming out with really cool ones that you can print out and it has it all for you.
Yeah.
But it was like the home job.
No, yeah, that was what I had it all typed out. I'd gone online and like had somebody double check who was a native speaker to make sure that I wasn't like mixing up all my words. And I was going to print it out, but then I don't know. I don't own a printer and I didn't want to. I'm just lazy. But it's just, I felt like I could get across well enough, like, does this have nuts in it? It was when it came to the particularities of communicating about, like, do you prepare this on cookware with utensils that you also use for, like, that, the nitty gritty of it is a lot harder. And even, I found, like, even when I got used to speaking French and got used to, like, figuring out the words for saying that sort of thing, it's just, I don't know if it was, I think it comes off, like, at least in Paris for me, it came off as if I was just like an entitled tourist because they weren't like hearing out the full request, which is like, no, please, I want to eat here, but I don't want you to kill me. And it comes off as like, oh, like typical Americans always making special requests or whatever. So they didn't give me much patience. So a card to hand them would have been very nice.
I think it really depends where you go, because it's the same in other countries that I've been to, even in England sometimes, actually.
Yeah.
And it's...
I can imagine.
Yeah, like... I mean, how do you deal with that when people are being a bit snooty?
In my head, like I want to say in my head, I say that I just like challenge them and like try to stay calm and polite and push and say like, no, I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but I need this. But in reality, what ends up happening is that I apologize a lot and just hope that they'll understand that I'm not trying to be like entitled. But I don't know. It also makes me angry. Like, You can afford to be a little bit more patient and listen to me for 8 more seconds than you originally planned on listening to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In my head, I have a much better reaction than I do in real life. In my head, I'm very like, no, actually, you know, like, but.
Yeah. I guess it's like, it's practice as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm fairly good when people are being a bit either snooty or I'm not sure if they've taken me seriously. I'm fairly good. I mean, I'd sometimes, like, my boyfriend or my friends will give me a little nudge and be like, aren't you going to go check? And I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm going. Which it's really good when you have friends and a partner who will, you know, they know the severity and they know you have to deal with it. So, and they just remind you that you need to, and they kind of give you the confidence or give you
a
little
push. It helps to have someone there who's not thinking you're crazy for trying to investigate further. Like, if you're the only one in your own head saying, like, well, everyone around me thinks this is absurd, but I know it's right. It helps to have someone else be like, you know, like, you should make sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Like, my boyfriend and I and another friend were at a restaurant, and this was in Bulgaria. I speak a little bit of Bulgarian, not very much. Like, I can read menus and say a little bit, but communicating about my allergy is still, I can communicate a little bit, like I'm getting my point across, but again, the nuances about cross-contamination and things is still quite difficult. So my friend who was with us does speak Bulgarian, and she was explaining it. And then the lady, I think it was the manager, she went off, and it went off with kind of a rolls her eye, and I'm like, okay.
Oh no.
Because it was one of those, like, it was like a Brazilian style restaurant where we'd been before and they were great. I think the last time I'd talked to the owner or something, and then he brought out the chef as well.
Okay.
So it was really good. So I knew they could cater for me. And they just, because they just bring out the salads on a fresh plate from the kitchen rather than being on a buffet style. And this lady who was there, she was like managing it. She just rolled her eyes, and then my boyfriend and my friend, I was just like, are they like, she's like, oh, is she going to bring it on a fresh plate? And like, I'm not sure. So they were like, I'm going to go check. So I went up and just like, I was just like, well, this feels really awkward. I feel kind of embarrassed, but I can't be embarrassed because I don't want to end up in hospital and potentially die. So, right, just go up to her. I don't care. Just like talking to myself in my head, be like, well, she thinks I'm crazy. I don't care, just as long as she listens to me.
Exactly.
So I went and reiterated the point in a mixture of Bulgarian and English. And then I was like, went back to the table. I was like, okay, well, at least I've rammed it home. She said she understood. She didn't act like she accepted what I was saying, but she said she understood. And I was like, okay, well. So I went back to the table, and my boyfriend and a friend were like, well, did she listen? And I'm like, well, we'll see.
I hope so.
I hope so. Maybe. And actually, she did. About 15 minutes later, there came out this huge plate of salad that was fresh from the kitchen, and it was fine. And it had all the.
Well, there you go.
So it was okay.
It was better to be embarrassed than to be really ill after you eat some salad. I mean, I had a similar thing happen in Paris, which I keep talking about because I was there like last month, but I had a similar thing happen where I was at a steakhouse that only did steak and fries and a salad. Mm-hmm. And that was all they served. So I figured, you know, it's a small menu. There were nuts in the salad, but I figured I can skip the salad and just have steak and fries and mm-hmm. it'll be totally fine. I sent them an email. They actually responded. They were like, yeah, we make everything in separate stations. Nothing touches anything else. You're totally good. I'm mm-hmm. like, all right, this will be easy. And it was the first restaurant I went to in Paris, actually. Mm-hmm. It was like 5 days in. I was having so much trouble. And I was like, okay, this is going to be easy. And I guess it was sort of like a sort of touristy place, not like crazy touristy, but just the waiters like spoke some English, like they would take orders in English if you couldn't speak French. So our waitress approaches the table, and I guess I always try to start in French, because then they seem to, I don't know, I guess it's more respectful, they take it as more respectful if I like start by making an effort. So I started in French. She immediately recognized that I spoke English natively, so she switched to English, and she's like, how do you want your steak cooked? Because that's all they really ask you. You don't get a menu or anything. Mm-hmm. They just tell them how you want your steak. And I told her, and then I said, also, I just have a quick question. And I was going to ask her, like, can you not bring me a salad? Can you just make sure it'd be mm-hmm. extra safe, whatever? And she's like, I don't speak English. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And I switched to French. But by that point, I guess I had tried all of her patience, all like 9 seconds of our interaction. And so she kind of just like huffed and walked away. And it seemed like she sort of got the message, but also sort of didn't. And I was really worried. And she's like, okay, well, I'm just not going to bring you sauce. And I'm like, okay, I don't think the sauce has nuts in it. But if you're saying that I shouldn't eat it, then I'm not going to eat it. So I had my sauceless steak. And then they bring you out a second order, mm-hmm. like all for the same entree. They bring you out like a second helping of more slices of meat. And she brings mine out straight from the kitchen, which was unusual, and I was like, okay, this is good. But she brought it on tongs that were covered in sauce, so there was like sauce all over my steak, and I was like, okay, well, I don't think the sauce has nuts in it, but she also told me not to eat the sauce. It was a bad experience. I ended up not eating the second helping of steak. I gave it to my boyfriend.
And he's like, yes, she's got an allergy.
I think so, honestly.
Yeah, I've had the same kind of experiences with my boyfriend.
It's like extra food.
Yes, and when you're going to a steak place, why would they say no?
Exactly. It's like,
you don't want it? Fine, I'll have it.
More for me.
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah, I've had that. And then, okay, so let's go back to a little bit about university. So going to university for the first time can be, well, it's a change. It's a big change. So how did you kind of prepare for that?
I actually have an answer to that. So when I was in high school and we were going through the whole like application process, at first I thought I was only going to look at schools in major cities, because I figured that would be like the easiest way to guarantee that I wouldn't end up in the middle of nowhere with nothing to eat. Because mm-hmm. I figured like most dorm rooms, I mean, you have a microwave at maximum, like a shared kitchen, which mm-hmm. I didn't really want to do a shared kitchen situation, because no one's that clean in a dorm kitchen, and I don't know what they're going to be like baking in there. And so, you know, so I was like, okay, I'm only going to look at schools in big cities. And then I visited this one school. I think I visited like Johns Hopkins or something, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. in a city, but which is also like on its own campus. And I'm just like, wow, grass is pretty. So I figured like I wanted to start looking at campuses after that. So I totally changed everything up, and I told my college advisor, I was like, you know what, I'm switching the whole plan, I only want to look at campuses from now on. She's like, all right. So I ended up at a school in central New York in the middle of nowhere in a village, not even a town. And I was only there for a semester. I transferred for nothing to do with food reasons, but I figured like leading up to that I had to like do some preparation because I was going to have a microwave and a mini fridge, but you can't just eat like frozen stove for every meal. So I was like, I don't know what the dining situation is going to be like. So I started, I started eating the school lunches at my high school every day. Okay. Like I would just make a point of eating every school lunch just as a matter of like getting used to it while I was still in like a comfortable environment. Yeah. We actually had pretty good school lunches. So I figured like I was pretty lucky for that. But so I did that. And then when I got to Hamilton, which is the school I went to, it ended up being all right. They weren't like that informed on allergens, honestly. Like, I don't know. I visited some schools that had like allergen free areas or stands in their dining halls, but they didn't. But they ended up having like a diner on campus, like a little, just like burgers and wraps and whatever. And I don't think there were any nuts there. So I ate at the diner a lot, like for most of my meals. And I ate out of like my own fridge and whatever. But yeah, I ended up leaving that school. I didn't like being in the middle of nowhere and a whole bunch of reasons. So I came back here and it was like mostly returning to normal. I moved back in at home, so my mom started cooking my meals again. And then when I ended up at this school, it wasn't really like there wasn't much I had to do to adjust or change because I sort of just continued living in the city I'd always lived in.
Ah, that's cool. I like the idea that you prepared yourself for university by making yourself eat school dinners. I think I've never heard that before. It's a really good idea.
I don't think I've ever explained it that way, but yeah, it was like a conscious thought process that I felt at the same time really insane and also really clever for coming up with that. I'll just do it slowly. I'll just get used to it.
No, I think that's a really good idea. Like for anyone, any kids listening, teenagers listening to this, preparing to go to university, practice. Yeah, because that's all it is. Like everything to do with managing life with allergies is practice. The more you
do it. When something goes wrong, I mean, nothing ever went wrong at my high school, but if something had gone wrong, I mean, I knew who the school nurses were. Mm-hmm. I had friends around me. Like I could have gone home within 40 minutes, gotten home. It wasn't like as dire a situation as it would have been if I had been in my first week at Hamilton or something like that, where I don't even know where the medical facilities are, let alone like what's there. You know, I wouldn't have known anybody. So I figured that navigating that sort of uncertainty in a familiar environment just makes it, I mean, like half as uncertain, which was it was a lot easier than like walking into a dining hall blind and not knowing how to like ask cafeteria staff about what's in the food or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. And like, anything does go bad, it's just, I think the way I like to think about it, and really, I think this kind of thinking has come as I've been an adult and really starting the podcast and the blog as well for me, is that if anything goes bad with having allergic reactions or someone, you know, handing you something and then you realize that it's got some your allergen in it, any of those were near misses or actual allergic reactions, it's a learning process. And if you take it as a learning experience, even if it's not a very nice one, you know what to look out for next time and you can adapt and you're going to be so much more aware.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think also you learn. It's like I'm taking a photography class at my school right now, and my professor on the first day, he's like, you're going to learn more from what you mess up in this class than from what you do right. And I think it's honestly, it works the same way. Like, you're going to learn a lot more from having like a near miss or a bad experience than you learn from just like doing everything perfectly all the time. And of course, you're never going to do everything perfectly all the time. It's going to happen. And when it does, I mean, it sucks, but at least you know what not to do next time.
Exactly. So my next question is, can you tell me about an allergy win that you've had?
An allergy win. Okay. So I, like everything else, I mean, when I was a kid, I ate a lot of like Chinese takeout. I really like Chinese takeout.
Oh, really?
And I didn't really think much about like how that could be dangerous. Because I know a lot of people with tree nut and especially peanut allergies have a lot of trouble finding Chinese food that could possibly be safe for them because it's all
try.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I completely stopped trying. Like, there was this one place we would get takeout from my family and it never went poorly, but I mean, they had tons of nuts. I don't know how it never went poorly, but it never did. So when I had that like brownie problem and then stopped eating everywhere, it was, I mean, Chinese restaurants were one of the last things I added back. And I figured, like, there's no way, I'm never going to find one without nuts. And, you know, between the language barrier and just the way that I've done, like, some research on how, like, cooking with woks work. And they're not usually, like, if something is cooked in a wok with nuts in it, and then, like, the next meal is cooked that doesn't have nuts in it, there's, I don't remember the details of it, but I remember reading that there was, like, a really high risk of cross-contamination as compared to other, like, methods of cooking. So I figured if I was going to eat at a Chinese restaurant, I wanted it to be one where there weren't any nuts. They just didn't have any nuts in the menu. And I was like, yeah, right, good luck finding that. So I got really frustrated because I figured, like, there's so many I mean, I live really close to Chinatown. There's so many Chinese restaurants here. There has to be one, but also I'm like, there's definitely not one. So I ended up, I don't know, I must have emailed and called like 150 restaurants. I don't even know how many places I called, but I ended up actually putting together like a compilation post on my blog of like maybe 10 to 15 Chinese restaurants that I found that just didn't have any nuts. Like, oh, they just didn't use them. Yeah, and it was really shocking to me. I found out from talking to a couple people that it's more the Americanized Chinese takeout types of places that have more nuts on the menu, and that the super authentic, like, straight from China type of food is often less nut filled. I don't know. It was really shocking to me, but I put this list together, and I think it's what generates me most of my traffic at this point, honestly, because if you Google nut-free Chinese restaurants in New York, nothing else is coming up.
Wow. Well, I am definitely going to be going through that list, because I've had Chinese twice, once made by my Chinese friend's grandma, and then the other one made by a family friend who ran a Chinese restaurant. And that was, like, that is twice in my 25, almost 26 years of life.
It's just, I mean, it was easier to find ones that didn't have tree nuts than that didn't have peanuts, but I definitely found some of both types, and I was pretty surprised. And it was really scary to go to them at first too. I was like, this is too good to be true. This is not going to happen. I'm going to die on the floor in this restaurant today. And I have not had a bad experience yet at a Chinese restaurant.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That's amazing. Okay. I'm going to be looking at this list. when I'm in New York in January. This is so good.
Okay. That's always my first link I send to people who write to me and ask, like, where should I go in New York City? Where should I take my daughter? I'm like, you know, get some Chinese food.
I have to go. Yeah, for me, it'd be going halfway across the world to get Chinese food.
Just get some Chinese food.
In America. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's so funny. Okay, and my final question before we wrap up is, what are your three top tips, your three suggestions to teenagers about eating out?
Top three. Okay. My first one and most obvious one would definitely be to always, like, carry your EpiPen or AuviQ or whatever. I much prefer the AuviQ. I upgraded from the EpiPen to the AuviQ. I call it upgrading because it was an upgrade. Like, it's like a quarter the size. You can put it in your pocket. It talks to you. It's like the cutest thing.
It talks to you.
Yeah, you pull off the little cap on it, and it says, like, I don't remember what it says. It says, like, if you are ready to inject, like, and it tells you what to do. So I guess if someone, like, doesn't know how to use it and you need someone else to do it for you, it tells them exactly what to do.
Wow.
I've heard that it hurts less, but I haven't used either, so I don't know. But I know I started carrying, I didn't carry my EpiPens very much, but I carry this in, like, my pocket because it fits. So that's also, I don't know if this is still going on, but it's free for anybody with any commercial insurance, I think, and over here. So that was, I know there's been, like, a lot of EpiPen drama.
Yeah.
Like the prices being jacked up, but a lot of people switched, I guess, because they could get this for free. So there's that little plug for AuviQ. I guess my second tip would be, I don't know, I think it's really important not to get complacent. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the type of person with allergies who, like, reads blogs and listens to podcasts about your allergies and all that, you're probably, like, a different sort of person with allergies than the type who just, like, walks into a restaurant and says, like, will this be okay for me? You know, like, the more casual, like, I feel like people self-select into, like, these sorts of Facebook groups and reading blogs and all of that, and they're, like, the more cautious type, which is good, I think, to be more cautious, but I also feel like that can get out of hand really quickly, and people can start restricting themselves and just completely shutting down and not going anywhere and not having any of those sorts of experiences, which can be more restricting than I think a lot of people who are like that would like to admit, myself included. So I think it's really important to like keep pushing yourself to try new things and try new restaurants, obviously within reason, not like experimenting when you're not comfortable and everyone has to exercise judgment, but you know, just to not get complacent, I think is really important. And then my third piece of advice is going to counterbalance that and to say to like, it's probably the most important thing is to be really careful, like to not just trust every word out of your server's mouth, even if your server seems like really nice and friendly, because you don't, like I said before, you don't need bad intentions to make a mistake or to end up misinforming somebody. Like, I don't think it's ever worth it to just pretend everything's fine and take a bite of something that you're feeling suspicious about just to avoid an awkward situation. Like, it's better to not get sick, not go to the hospital, all of that, even if it involves being weird to a waiter for 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's just your another person's feelings is nowhere near as important as your health.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're, you know,
not having, even close.
Yeah. So it's always remembering that, and you can always say no, and then it's your allergy and you know it better than anyone else.
Yeah. And people like to really like to act like they know it better than you do too, which is so insane. Like, you know what you're going to react to, and you know, I mean, you know what types of things you react to, you know where your limits are, you know what you're comfortable with. And at a certain point, if you're not comfortable with the meal, you're not going to have a good time anyway, even if it's totally safe. So
Exactly. And even between people with allergies, one allergy is always going to be different to another. Like, my allergies to tree nuts is going to be different to your allergies to tree nuts. And it's, it's just all different. So you are going to know it better than anyone else. Also, you have your best interests in heart at all times.
Exactly. Like, you're most invested in staying alive.
Yeah, exactly. So that, I think that's a perfect place to wrap up. Thank you so much, Julia. And tell me, where can people find your blog and connect with you on social media?
So my blog is nutfreenewyork.com. Short and sweet. And then I'm on Instagram is actually the only social network I'm on right now, at nutfreeny, because I already made at nutfreenewyork and then accidentally lost that account. So now it's nutfreeny.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining me and talking all about your experiences. I've really enjoyed it, and talking like a different side of allergies. Well, a different side, but the normal side.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
So that was Juliet from Nut Free New York. And what a great episode. I love hearing about how people navigate with food allergies and get to do all the normal things like going out with their friends, you know, having a boyfriend, teaching them about allergies, going to university. I think it's just fantastic that we can find ways to live with allergies and not be defined by our allergies. I actually found Juliet because I was searching for myself, you know, not free places to go and look at in New York to go and eat at. And whenever I'm looking for my allergies, whenever I say I have allergies, actually, it's really funny. I obviously, you all know that I have a severe nut allergy, peanuts and tree nuts, but then I also have some intolerances, so gluten, potentially some dairy. And whenever I say that I'm allergic to nuts and then I'm gluten intolerant, everyone, you know, hangs to the gluten thing. And I'm just like, wait. You know, the gluten's important because it'll make me feel sick, but I need no nuts because that could kill me. So in that order, find food for me. And it's just so funny. It's really interesting how people, you know, what sticks in their minds, because it's to do with what people are aware of. And it's good they're aware of gluten-free, but again, when you've got allergies, you've got to make sure that they come first, because they're the ones that have the most severe consequences. And yeah, like, I just I love hearing all these experiences, and I really love hearing all the kids, like allergy kids, and talking to other people who have allergies and hearing what they think. Because as a kid, I mean, there was one girl in my class who had an allergy too, but after that, I didn't really have friends with allergies, actually. So it's been really nice starting this podcast, because I can talk about allergies with people who have them and who live with them. And yeah, I don't know about you, but I find it really nice. So speaking of allergies and all my updates, because in the last week since I last published a podcast episode, I have been just on a roll with working on things. Now, first up, you guys remember I was running a competition with Peter Alderman, Dr. Thomas Bonner. Well, the winners are in, and thank you to the, I think it's five people who have posted on the show notes page telling me a little bit about their allergy journey. You are going to be contacted with and how to get your prizes. Yeah, so that is Courtney. That is Courtney and Kylie and Rebecca, Emma, and I think one more, which was Natalie. So you will all be receiving an email from me on to get your address from you, and then I will be sending out your prizes. So congratulations. Don't worry, everyone. I will be having more giveaways in the next, probably quite soon. I haven't quite figured it out yet, but I will be doing something, because at the end of this month, on the 31st of October, it will be the first birthday of the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, which is really exciting. So actually, if you've got any ideas of what you'd like, whether it's a giveaway, whether it's, I don't know, a special episode to come, or, you know, content, do you want video, do you want, what do you want? Tell me and I'll see what I can do. I mean, it's a first birthday celebration, so I kind of want to do something. For those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you will know that I have been banging on about this chocolate book that I'm making, and I'm actually really excited. On Friday, I just sat, I think I did about 6 to 8 hours worth of editing on it, and it is looking so pretty. I just was jumping around the office because it was just looking really pretty. I got really excited. I took a video in the middle of the day. I posted it on my Instagram, so you can check it out, Eat Allergy Safe Instagram. I think it went to Facebook, I'm not sure, but I'll post it again on Facebook, maybe even an updated one. And it looks so, I'm so excited. The pictures are going in, and it makes it look so much better than just having writing. I've also been asked a few times on Instagram and on Facebook how people can get their hands on a book. And originally, I was just going to post it straight to Amazon and you can buy straight away. But I'm considering opening up pre-ordering on the Allergy Safe website for books. And then that will be posted out to you in time for Christmas. What do you think? I'd love to know. I'm thinking of sorting out that kind of option. I need to get some techie help on how to set it up. But would you be interested in pre-ordering the chocolate book? It's free from the top 14. I give tips whether for, you know, substituting. I do use gluten-free oats in my recipes because I can tolerate them. But I'm trying to add options so that if you can't tolerate oats, you've got options like how much using pre-mixed gluten-free flour blends or other alternative flours, things like that. I've tried to make sure that there's something for everyone in this recipe book, and I've actually added in the welcome letter at the beginning, if there is a recipe that you've bought this book and there is something, you've got a recipe in there, there's no recipe for you, you get in contact with me and I will make you a recipe. Because I want there to be just one, at least one recipe for everyone. So that is my promise to you. That is what the whole book's about. So if there isn't anything in there and you've already bought it, don't worry. I'm going to make a personalized one for you, especially for you. And all you need to do is get in contact with me. What is next? I have another bunch of projects. So currently, in the next 2 weeks, I have four projects. So the chocolate book being one. I'm also going to be teaching in a school in the north of England on the 9th of November. It's the Tuesday after the Allergy and Free From show, which I'm really excited about. I'm currently working on those recipes and my lesson plans. Incredibly exciting. And then I have the Allergy and Free From show. I'm not exhibiting this year, because I am going to be speaking. Now, I have exhibited at the last two Liverpool shows, and then I exhibited in London as well. And I'm looking forward to exhibiting again at some point, but first I need to make some money because it's not cheap exhibiting. I love meeting you all, having a stand there. And I'm hoping that you'll all come to my talk. If you're in the north of England, come to my talk. I'm going to be talking on Saturday at 12 o'clock all about beating allergy anxiety. And then on Sunday at 12 o'clock also, I am going to be talking about, you know, how to raise a confident allergy kid, how you can become confident as an allergy sufferer. So it's all going to be really proactive, really. It's all about positive allergy living. You know, how can we make allergies a part of our life rather than the defining aspect? How can we not let our allergies make us miss out? We just have to do things differently. So I'm really excited. I have so many ideas in my head at the moment, which I am slowly distilling down into, I think it's about a 20-30 minute talk. So I'm going to have to check the exact length, otherwise I'm going to be talking forever. I will be recording this as well, so I'm planning to post it later on the podcast for those of you who live overseas. So stay tuned, and yeah, you won't miss out. But if you can get there, I'd love to have your support, as this is my first time doing a proper public speaking event, and it's quite a big thing to be doing at the Allergy and Free From Show, because it's the event of the allergy calendar in England. Very exciting. And then the fourth project I actually have on is, when I first started doing Eat Allergy Safe, I originally made products, and products is still something very close to my heart because it's basically where I started cooking. You know, the more restrictions I had with my diet, the more I realized I just needed to get creative in the kitchen. And originally, I was making products, as I said, so gluten-free and vegan, you know, fresh food for delis and cafes. And this is all started while I was at uni. And this developed. And my kind of defining product was gluten-free vegan dark chocolate truffles. And they had no added sugar. And they were didn't have any nuts. I didn't, you know, I couldn't entirely trace back everything. So I didn't claim like nut-free on the packet. I know it's annoying. I was so irritated that I couldn't do that. I'm working on it. But yeah, they're gluten-free and suitable for vegan, so dairy and egg allergy sufferers too. I use coconut milk in them because I just made it so like richer. Yeah, they're just fantastic. I also won commended in the Free From Food Awards back in 2016, so that's exciting. And I didn't do them last year, but they are coming back. I am going into production this week. They are going on sale on Amazon in November, and I am doing it so that you can get them on Prime delivery as well. It's really exciting. I've had so many deliveries at my house for, you know, chocolate. I've got quite a few kilos of chocolate, agave syrup. I've got, you know, organic cocoa powder being delivered, boxes, ribbons, you name it. Like, it is a full handcrafted process by yours truly. I also have some of my friends coming and helping me with this because it's rather a large product. Project. It's quite a small project. So these are going to be, yeah, they're just delicious. They are absolutely delicious. I really hope you enjoy them. I will be giving you updates when they're available to buy on Amazon. I'll put a link on the blog as well so you can find them really easily. So that's it for today, I think. My last note is, do you have a story to share? Like, the whole point of this podcast is sharing our experiences of building a community. So I really want to hear from you. Have you had an allergy challenge, big or small, that you've learned from, that you've overcome? Have you started a business? Have you helped a friend with allergies? Have you helped your brother or your sister, your mum, your dad, your auntie or your uncle? Tell me about it. Share your story. Contact me via email on the eatallergysafe.com website. Go to the contact page and tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about your story. What's the challenge that you've had and how have you overcome it? What have you learned? I want to hear from you because I want to share your stories, because your stories could really, really help one of our listeners. one of your allergy community, one of the Eat Allergy Safe community, it could also possibly save someone's life by making them more allergy aware, and that's making them more allergy safe. So please get in touch with me, use the contact page on the eatallergysafe.com website, and then we'll go from there. So thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope you're as excited as I am about all the things that are going on. And yeah, I can't wait for next week. We've got another Allergy Kids story, and we've only got 2 weeks left of our Allergy Kids series. So remember, allergies aren't about missing out. They're about doing things differently.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Moda. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.